like to go ahead and call the meeting.
Gotta say that a little louder.
Bring out the butter, the apple. Oh, is that you?
Yeah.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. Dr. Foster is not able to be here today. Did everyone get a chance to look at the minutes from February 9th? Any discussions, corrections?
I'd love to approve.
So, is that a second?
Second.
Minutes are approved. Public comments? Any public comments? Chairman's comments? I have none. I'm coming. Didn't know five, a few minutes ago, but coming in here, but. Presentations, reproductive maternal child health.
That would be me. My name is Annie Lakatosh, and I am the nurse practitioner. Thank you very much.
I don't think I'll need it, though.
Okay.
It's very straightforward, but thank you. I'll just put it right there.
And so I am providing clinical services both here at the job center as well as at our WIC site. So I'm just going to give you a synopsis of 2014. Okay, so we have the Kenosha Sexual Health Awareness Clinic, and that takes place on Monday afternoons, Thursday mornings, and it is a walk-in clinic. We also have our Well Woman Clinic, which is at WIC, and that's Tuesdays all by appointment. One of the newest clinics that we have this year, that has been up and running the entire year, is the Colposcopy and the LARC Clinic. Colposcopy is a special procedure that is provided to women who have abnormal results to their first pap smear. And then the LARC is the long-acting reversible contraception. We are doing those on the last Tuesday of the month, and those two are by appointment. And then we are also offering reproductive health services through NOD. That too is a walk-in service. So in KSHAC, we do continue to offer blood tests for syphilis, HIV, hepatitis B and C. Cultures for gonorrhea and chlamydia. By exam, we will culture herpes, and then we do provide HPV wart treatment. And then I will provide microscopic exam looking for trichomonas, yeast, and bacterial vaginosis. We also offer pregnancy tests and urinalysis, and then again, contraceptive counseling and provision of supplies. So we do have a greater range of birth control options that we are now able to offer our community members. And then we also offer financial counseling to people who may be eligible for different types of insurance, specifically the family planning only services, which is a state insurance. So for 2014, we had 497 clients seen in 81 clinics. 49% were female, 51% were male, 91% were found in or were Kenosha residents. We had 51% identify themselves as white, 44% identify themselves as African American, and 12% as Hispanic. In total, we had over 1,000 screening tests and then over 300 treatments provided. And then you can see that we did provide a number of vaccines during those clinics as well. For our Well Women Clinic, that is offered on Tuesdays by appointment, we offer breast and pelvic exams, the cervical cancer screening, as well as mammogram referrals. And again, we do offer birth control counseling as well as supplies. We do pregnancy testing and then STD testing and treatment on a much smaller basis over there, but it is an option for us. So for 2014, the Wisconsin Well Woman Program, we had 198 women enrolled, with 168 completing their screening services. 9 women lost insurance and were enrolled in MA for treatment. So 8 were diagnosed with breast cancer, 1 with cervical cancer. And then 3 women were diagnosed with breast cancer through the Well Woman program. Now, separate to that, we do have a fund that Pam Kabalaskis, the nurse that I work with, she helps monitor those funds. We had 141 women use those funds for a total of $19,000. And so that could be screening, that could be wigs, that could be any number of things that they may not have been able to afford prior. And then our colposcopy and Lark Clinic. So again, the colposcopy is a service that is a specialized procedure to help diagnose abnormal cells. So if a path test comes back abnormal, we can then proceed to this diagnostic procedure. Our first one was in August. We had one in December. We had one this last month. And it really depends on how many cervical cancer screening tests are done in order to know how many colposcopies we're doing. So I would say overall, we're doing less Pap tests and therefore less colposcopy tests, but it's an extremely awesome service to provide to women who may not have access to these services. The long-acting reversible contraceptives that we offer, we have two IUDs that we are now able to provide to women, and we started this year. And the protection from pregnancy can be anywhere from 5 to 10 years, depending on what the product is that they desire. And that too is very exciting because that then opens up more doors for options for women. And then we currently have this as a monthly clinic, but I would say that our expectation is to offer the LARC, the IUDs, as just more frequently, because that is something that we would probably be able to do with a lot more people eligible for that. And then the reproductive health services in NAD, it is a walk-in. We are capable of giving these services to all at all three of our sites, so here at the Job Center, at WIC, as well as at KCC. And it's these walk-in services are available throughout NAD business hours, which is really great, especially for people who can't fit 9 to 3 o'clock in their schedule, you know, for any number of reasons. We provide contraceptive counseling, the multiple methods of birth control outside of the IUDs at this point. And like I said, it just increases access for our clients and it promotes reproductive life plans so that we can really grab people, talk to them, counsel them, and develop that relationship with them. So what's going on? We have a number of QI projects that we continue to work on. We have different QI projects this year. And it is really to promote how we provide care as a team. For example, one thing that we're doing is we are texting our clients the day before their appointments on Tuesdays to see if that will increase the likelihood of them coming to those appointments. We are hoping to increase access for all of our patients. We're trying to grab our patients when we meet them and talk to them about what their current needs are and how we can support them and what their reproductive life plan is. We're also getting involved in the Get Yourself Tested initiative this year, and that means that we will provide STD testing and other services at two different sites this year in 2015, which is very exciting, because again, we're hoping to do it, for example, out at KCC, and that's not a place that we typically have KSHAC. So it would just increase education opportunities as well as the testing itself. And then we continue on a CT initiative. I think I talked about it last year. It's a year-long initiative that started last July 1st, and it is to increase chlamydia testing in women ages 15 to 24, because that is the highest, that is the age group with the highest rate of chlamydia infections. So that's what we're up to. And then I'm gonna pass it on to Crystal, who's next.
Hi everyone, my name is Crystal Raffenstein and I'm a nurse here at the health department, and I am the maternal child health team leader here. So, Thank you. So there are two major components to the maternal child health programs, and that's clinical services and then the injury prevention component. So for the clinical services, that's the nurse of the day. And we have three Nurse of the Day clinics, one here at the Job Center, one out at the County Center, and then one at WIC. And they provide an array of services on a walk-in basis. So you can walk into any of our clinics and really get any of those services. And we've got the three nurses and then myself that manage it. So education, walk-in birth control, pregnancy testing, blood pressure, vaccines, and then we also manage all the reportable communicable disease for Kenosha County. And then the other component is the injury prevention piece. So we have the Suicide Prevention Coalition, and then we have the three death review teams. We've got the fetal infant mortality review team, the child death review team that we're a part of, and then the self-harm death analysis review team, which is the adult death review team that covers suicide and overdose deaths. So another part of the injury prevention piece is our car seat and cribs for kids. So this far for 2015, we have given out education and car seats, 53 of them, and then cribs, 28 of them, along with the education that goes with that. And then also the Prevention Services Network, which is a nurse that works with families that are high risk for legal troubles or court troubles. So what we're working on for this year, we've got the Kenosha Annual KIC Symposium, so the Innovation Symposium, coming up on the 21st at the Recplex Beach Pavilion. I believe you probably all have received an invitation. If you haven't, you're welcome to come.
At the beach pavilion, not at the regular?
It will be at the beach pavilion.
Okay.
So that's on the other side of the lake.
Right.
Right. It begins at 5. We're going to be highlighting the HPV vaccine and then also the updated information for adult vaccine. And then we're also working on providing information for local providers on the importance of HPV vaccination. And then another big thing that we may be working on is DHS is writing for a grant on more opiate prevention initiatives, and because of our forward thinking in Kenosha, they've asked us to partner with them if they receive those grant funds. We're very excited about that. Questions?
With the birth control, do you do teens?
Yes, we do.
How early?
I would say yes, we do. someone once told me, and I'm sure I quoted her 50,000 times because she's sitting here in the room, but she said to me, I'd rather talk to someone about birth control than about pregnancy. So I would say that if someone is in need of birth control, they need to come in and let's have a conversation. And that is to assess for any abuse issues, anything complicating the situation, but yes.
And have you thought of doing like implant?
Yes. In fact, tomorrow I will be doing some refresher training on it, and we have everything but the actual unit to do it. I have a preceptor, I have all the goods that need to happen. So yes, for sure. For sure, for sure.
Good. Might I just add to kind of tie in for everybody in awareness with our teams are collaborating, as you got a sense. These are two separate teams, but they're collaborating on initiatives. And you're hearing a lot about birth control and family planning and life plans, because through our FEMR and our child death review, we've identified that birth spacing, kids too close, we're seeing some relationship. We're trying to expand birth spacing so that moms can be healthier, their child can be healthier, so that whole family planning piece is critical in regards to a healthier family unit. And then also, you're hearing a lot about STD testing, chlamydia. We've recognized, through the child death review, through the adult death review, through FEMR, that we've seen either fetal demise or early death infant mortality related to infection in the womb. That maybe the baby is born early. Gwen probably can express it better than me, but early delivery and fetal demise. And so identifying these infections early is critical. And so we're just trying to, again, look at our population, enhance these areas so that we can have healthy families, healthy births, healthy deliveries. And, I think that's, you know, some of these beginning steps and expansions. Crystal's there.
No, I think that the death review teams have been, I hate to say great when we're talking about death, but really they give us a snapshot about what's going on in our community and what people are dying early, and then we can really tailor our interventions to meet the needs of the community. So it's really been interesting and great for us to have the data to support our interventions.
And the S, oh, I just want to say, in the SDART that's being done, that's what the state wants us to replicate statewide. We're the only adult death review in the state of Wisconsin, and so our state is seeking funds from the Center of Disease Control so that we can then share what we've done and mentor other counties who may be interested in doing this. And so that'll be, it'll be a huge initiative. But again, that's that forward thinking that we've got going on here, and overachievers, the community continues to be.
Did you say you did put in IUDs?
Yes.
And do you put them in adolescents or only adults?
Again, I would say yes. I would have that conversation with them, but I know that there's a push for IUDs to be available to teens.
But there's not many people who do them, so that's why I'm wondering what you would consider that.
I would absolutely. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And just a comment that we just started doing this plan at our clinic about a year ago, probably from 60 or 70 already. It's been a very popular option for that county.
Yes.
They're much more likely to go with that option versus IUD, which we don't do. But.
Yeah, and when I've done presentations for our PACE program, the girls that are 15, 16, they are, I think, more willing to consider the next one than an IUD. And
absolutely.
Whatever we need to do to meet their needs so that we can help them reach their goals. That is.
And our teen pregnancy rate is going down in Kenosha County. So, again, we want healthy kids, we want to eliminate poverty and not continue to perpetuate the cycle of poverty, and it's teenagers having babies does no one any good.
Anybody have any other questions for Annie or Crystal? Thank you guys very much, great work.
Thank you.
So, next one, Commercial Lifestyle Initiative. Pam?
Good morning, Pamela Smith, or afternoon rather. I've been before you before. Most of you will remember that the LIFE project was funded in 2010, and the first couple of years were spent during planning, and the next 2 years from that during implementation. We had five shared last time, five funded grants in the community at that time from that were independently funded grants, including a home visitation motto, a centering pregnancy grant that was not, we were not able to implement, and a fatherhood initiative and dismantling racism. All of that happened in the second 2 years, and now we are in year five and moving kind of from interventions and implementation at this point to looking at systems, policy systems, and environmental change. So all four of the LIFE grants have been asked to conduct an environmental scan to reassess where we are. And what issues we are addressing. And Cindy mentioned that the teen pregnancy rate is going down. Kenosha has been very successful in that our infant mortality rate has also been going down. And so we are now looking at systems improvements to take a look at low birth weight and prematurity. So this process involved these 10 steps. We are at step 7 with our collaborative, and that is including about 21, 22 different agencies and organizations in the community that are around the table. And we selected, after some stakeholder surveys, discussion groups, the priority that emerged and surfaced to the top was mental health, pregnancy, and postpartum for the populations that we are serving, based on evidence that stress and traumatic events play an important role in the risk of preterm and low birth weight, and that the timing of those events are also important, and that maternal psychological stress is a critical element for us to look at when designing interventions and programs. And we are believing that implementing greater interagency collaboration and linkages for referrals of women who have mental health indicators and issues, using screening tools will improve the whole access and utilization of the services in the Kenosha community. So we were doing a mapping exercise, taking a look for those three purposes, to understand the issue, look at the complexity of the linkages between the different factors, and then for opportunities to make changes in the system. And so, next slide. Okay, so the pathway activity we conducted with technical assistance from the LIFE Regional Program Office, Wisconsin Partnership Program funded staff at the UW School of Public Health, as well as I think they are in partnership with Aurora Sinai. And so we did this exercise going from right to left to look at the impact of stress, and then we identified that trust and stigma were also critical issues in having access to therapeutic services for stress-induced and mental health-related issues. So all of that leads to the stress-induced physical illness or emotional illness, and then there's a change in behavior, which then leads to the lack of adequate nutrition, self-medication, sleep deprivation, and then the other closer issues that all impact infant mortality. So this was a very interactive exercise with our entire collaborative, and helped us in our future planning for addressing these goals. So our action agenda is to increase access and the availability of mental health services for pregnant postpartum women. And then with those four strategies, addressing both policy system capacity and environmental issues. And I thought that would be enough, and you wouldn't want to look at more. So over the next 5 years, we are funded for 5 years now through 2019, and we will be developing specific interventions and plans amongst the members of the collaborative and other stakeholders to try to address these issues that are emerging throughout the community for mental health and postpartum issues. Want to add anything, Gwen?
You're doing fine.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
I'll add something, Pam.
Thank you.
I attended the meeting, and although this big elephant in the room of mental health, this issue sat there, I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this is just way too big. But I have to tell you that there was overwhelming response from the community. They wanted to tackle this issue of mental health. So they have their work cut out. Pam's doing an excellent job of, you know, how to eat an elephant one bite at a time and breaking it apart. And so it's a huge task. And so I, you know, welcome your support throughout these next years as we try to navigate, maybe literally, you know, walking through the system of how we can improve in our community and try to have areas that we access, improvement, trend, all the things that are associated, which I think you're going to be, as time goes on, identifying those bites.
Yeah, the other thing that has been important for us is that we have a new provider in the community in AMRI Counseling. And they actually do home visiting where the therapist will actually go into the home for therapeutic services and counseling services. So I'm hoping to look at expanding that and serving more women, and so that they are healthier and their babies are healthier.
And I also think as we start to talk about it from this initiative, then other organizations and agencies will start to move towards helping more women. We just met with Behavioral Healthy, actually at the Community Health Center, some of their staff, and they're looking at, you know, how can we help in your initiative? So
good.
People are opening up their doors for these women that really do need the services.
Any other questions or comments for Pam? Thank you.
Thanks.
Megan?
Thank you.
It's a lab arsenic update.
change our heads.
Yes. So I'm Megan Warblett. I'm the forensic analytic and forensic chemist, and I'm going to be briefly talking about our new testing service that we offer, which is arsenic testing. So effective October 1st, 2014, there has been some changes to the Wisconsin Administrative Code with the DNR, where there's which requires additional water tests when there is well or pump work, and also when there is a property transfer well inspection. So I will be talking about these new requirements and then what we have done to meet the new testing. So the new requirements for well or pump work: samples collected following well or pump work require the use of certain DNR sample forms. Some are provided to the well driller by the DNR. The 3300-265 we have with us in the laboratory, but can also be printed off from the DNR's website. Other requirement is that the test results must be electronically submitted to the DNR by the testing laboratory. And then the new requirements are, if the new wells are well construction, drillers must collect samples for bacteria, and now they have to do nitrate as well. Pump installers must collect samples for bacteria only. And then for pump work involving entering into existing wells, pump installers must collect samples for bacteria, and now the new requirements is that they must collect for nitrate as well as arsenic. So this is one of the forms, which the only part that has been updated is the required testing, so entering into existing well, now nitrate and arsenic is listed on the form. So they fill out the primary form and then we fill out this form. So the requirements for the property well transfer inspections, samples collected, the well water samples are required to be tested for bacteria, nitrate, and arsenic. The DNR does not require any sampling if there is no inspection. DNR forms for samples following pump work should not be used. We provide our own form for our testing. So the only thing added to our form now is the arsenic test, which I'll be showing. And then the laboratory must hold drinking water certification, which we do. And then the test results are not to be reported to the DNR. So this is our form. Our laboratory provides bacteria, nitrate, and fluoride. And now, to meet the requirements, we subcontract for arsenic. However, we also still list it on our form and provide the kits. I'll go into a little more detail, but our front of our form, the customer fills out the top recording with their address, and then we fill out the one side with the results. On the back of the form is the sampling procedure, which the customer does with the water and the kit. As well as our hours of operation and cost for each test. For the bacteria, nitrate, and fluoride, it's $27 per test, and now with arsenic, it depends on how fast they want the results by. So if they want the results 5 to 10 days, the cost is $35. If they need it rushed, so results within 1 to 2 days, then it's $70. And those are based on our subcontracting laboratory as well as our processing fee with the shipping costs. So like I said, we subcontract these arsenic samples. We do not possess the instrumentation within our laboratory for the arsenic testing, as well as the funds to get the instrumentation is highly expensive. So in order to make the time frame of the October 1st deadline, we decided to subcontract the arsenic samples in order so we did not lose the services from these well drillers as well as private well owners. I have listed the DNR code, which allows us to do so. Says that we can subcontract to another certified lab, which we subcontract our samples to the State Laboratory of Hygiene. They provide the results electronically, but they also provide the results to us. We provide the results to the well owner, and then I'll give a more detailed process of what we do. So our sample processing, WSLH, we call and ask for a select amount of kits. They give us the water kits. We provide the kit to the customer. They sample the water. When we receive the water sample, we take our form that we provide to them and transfer it to the WSLH form. And then we ship the sample with the WSLH form to the state laboratory of Hanjin. They send us the results, and then we resend the results to the customer. And then as of being in this year, we have subcontract about 21 samples. So we, in order to meet the deadline and the requirements, we had to decide if we were just going to provide our customers with available laboratories or subcontract samples. And we decided to do the subcontracting route, so we did not lose those services for the other testing. And does anyone have any questions?
Sure. Now, the contractors, the well drillers, have that information.
Yes,
right?
We had provided letters. They had received letters from the DNR with the changes, and we had provided them letters with our new services.
Do they get fined if they don't?
It is not our responsibility if they meet those requirements. We're just helping them by subcontracting.
Right. The other question would be, I know some homeowners would do their own pump work.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't even know anything about this exists.
Yeah, and I think that would be more of environmental question. I couldn't tell you. We basically provide the services and then they give it to us. That would be more of them contacting the DNR themselves.
There is a program that the environmental section does monitor pumps whales.
Mm-hmm. I can see people, homeowners, just working on it themselves and nobody even know about it.
You mean physically themselves or contract with someone? So if they contract with someone, even privately, that person has to abide by the state government.
Mm-hmm. Right, I can see some people pulling the pump themselves and working on it. We probably did when I was a kid, because we always had well water.
Any other questions from Megan?
That was a fun topic.
Thank you. Health officer. Things to mention. We're continuing on with our electronic health record system that'll be changing over. We're at the point that we're still doing discovery phase with some areas, gathering information, and the negotiation piece between the vendor and Kenosha County. We're just working on getting this on the paper. So that's everybody in agreement, and so now it's just signing off and we'll start. So probably the end of April, we'll be having the company come in and do a large presentation to the staff. Also want to mention about our early childhood comprehensive systems program, and there's some updates, and I'm going to ask Gwen and or Dr. Urlach if they'll give the updates on that.
Sure. We've got a kickoff event coming up that's going to include basically any stakeholders that deal or work with families and kids. We're looking at daycare workers, healthcare providers, mental health providers, law enforcement, foster care, anybody who's working with kids. We're going to have a big meeting to try and pull them all together and give them information about different services or different trainings that we have. We have trauma-informed care. We have NRF, which is Neuro-Relational Framework. We have PWE, which is Parents Interacting with Infants. We have developmental screens. And so we want to offer these services or these trainings to the community to try and get everybody involved in working with that. With this meeting, we'd also like to be able to get people involved so that we can do more outreach to other groups that didn't show up at the table. Like, most likely it's going to be the mental health and the healthcare providers that we're going to have to go out to. Then later on, we're going to have another type of kickoff meeting to get more people involved stakeholder-wise of people with influence and financial backing. So, yeah, the money and the power people, once we have everything going. So it would be more people like here, any government people, business leaders, places like that, to try and get more backing, because we need to make this a sustainable program. We need to be able to do it ourselves. The state gives us the initial training, and then we have to keep it going.
The kickoff is May 14th. It's Thursday, May 14th, 11:30 to 1:30, and it'll be at the Kenosha, Kenosha Public Museum. You're all invited, for sure. We'd love to have you there. I think it's going to be really good. It's great speakers and lots of information.
Thank you. I want to thank Dr. Gerlach for stepping up and being our physician champion. She's given us her time and talent and passion for this initiative to help educate the community on this gap that we've identified with lack of training for providers, essentially, on these areas, so that we have the resources available in our community to connect the children they identify with the needs that would assist them.
And also, Elizabeth has put together a resource book that we're going to distribute to people that's got anybody who provides services, whether it's mental health, healthcare, educational programs, anything like that, so that it's a quick, easy access that people have. You need this type of service, we can look in this book and figure out where to go.
Good. Excellent. Well needed. I hope you picked up a copy of the NALBO news brief from the National Association for Local Boards of Health. It's going to be a quarterly publication. Apparently they had stopped it many years ago, and they just resurrected this publication that due to demand. And so if we have any articles, we can submit those. So if you have anything that you have suggestions for, just let me know. Our environmental health team, they hired an environmental public health tech and a sanitarian. The tech has started, and the sanitarian is due to start, I think, in a week or two. The nursing team, we had two active cases of tuberculosis that our Corporation Council attorney, Joe Cardamone, has been working very closely with us. One was in our detention center. This person was transferred here from Kentucky. He was in the federal prison system there for quite a while and then came here. Unknown to us in the general population for about a month. And then came back with this individual. The smears that were done in Kentucky came back culture positive. And so really put everybody, including Crystal as a new team leader, overseeing the nurses of the day. Everybody really had to work cooperatively with the detention center, the Kenosha Visiting Nurse Association that's contracted by the detention center. We had to screen, TB skin test, all of those individuals that were exposed by this one person. So several hundred people, was it? And
with both cases, we've screened about 370 people in the last month. Mm-hmm. Any positives?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, just for the setting.
Yeah, the lady not active, so.
Right. We had to go draw for T-spots. ADNA didn't really want to do that, and we draw blood all the time, so that was rather easy for us. And
send them out for chest x-rays.
Yep, yeah. Chest x-rays. So it was really a team effort. The individual then had to be sent, team that produced sputum, so had to be sent for bronchoscopies or
inductions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it person since has been transferred, or we don't know yet, is due to be
leaving today.
Okay. Will be transferred back to his home country. And we are collaborating with the medical system in that country to assure the person will continue with medication for the full length so as not to wander back and then be resistant. Glenn?
No, that's it.
So, but this is a system, a federal system. I don't know.
Joe, did you have anything you wanted to add in regards to those areas of concern? Okay. The second one, another time-intensive case, an individual who basically was homeless, but a cousin letting couch surf or stay in his home, and so again, Crystal and her team really had to build a very trusting relationship with this individual, and continue. That person actually has been taking his medication, so that's the best thing we can ask for, but we're still waiting for a conversion on his feelings. So that'll be a while. He'll be with us for a while. Our nurse family partnership team and Gwen, through coordination, we met with Congressman Paul Ryan on Friday, and he spent about an hour with us, our team members, and four families and their children that came and told their story of that they've been working with these nurses and what a difference in their lives the nurses have made. And they brought their children, so we had some of the graduating two-year-olds, and so these women had been in the program for a couple of years, and so they really could express what their life was like before. One of the women said she had been in foster care her entire life, and without this nurse helping guide her, I mean, she didn't even know that you say good morning to people in the morning. And so that's how basic her skill sets were, and this nurse helped her with how to eat healthy when you're pregnant, going to your appointments, all these things that many of us take for granted, and really helped to just nurture them along through weekly visits throughout those 2.5 years, weekly to monthly, depending on the needs. So that was just one of the stories, but I have to say that this program is already, even though it's in its early stages, we've only been doing this a little over 2 years. We have high school graduates, that's a key indicator. We have some that are married, another key indicator. They have jobs, another key indicator. And so really it's going to be a long term when we see that these children are not in the criminal justice system, the children are graduating from high school, and these long-term effects which reduce a hardship on the taxpayers, the tax system, and so that is our ultimate goal. And we asked Congressman Ryan to, one, he is supporting this program. This is through McVie funding, which the Senate will vote on today. The House already approved it before their two-week recess. And so this will be to extend it for 2 years. We're hoping that Congressman Ryan, who sits on he's the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, who will oversee these McVie funds, will make this for the long haul. This is not a snippet of time of 3 to 5 years. This is, you're either in it for the duration or why bother? Because we need to be continuing to show the long-lasting effects of this program and the impact to the community. And so we've asked him for, we shared with him some ideas on tax incentives and tax reform, and he had a conversation with our families and then took a group picture. So maybe Karen, you can send out the group picture to our Board of Health members, and you can see it was really just a really special, special time. And we are very grateful to our families that showed up, like, on time. We have a reduced no-show rate. So, I mean, that's another huge key indicator in our community that if we can get the population that really struggled with that one area alone, it's pretty amazing. Let's see here. I want to share that Pam Smith wrote a proposal to the OAK,
Wisconsin Partnership Program.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. To support the ECCS community pilot. So she wrote a grant to bring more funding to our community so we can further enhance this initiative. Any tidbits you want to share about that? Or?
Well, just it was $45,000 over 2 years and basically would provide staff support for the ECCS effort. Early childhood, again, looking at systems and trying to improve the system of services delivery for early childhood. Social-emotional, we have Birth to Three, Early Head Start, Head Start, many of the early childhood providers around the table, try to strengthen that system.
So we're grateful for Pam's strengths, because in her other world, this is what she did for a living, and so we really got a tutor here, and we're grateful for that.
Yeah, no charge.
Yeah, that's not the only time she's written grants on the side for us, so we're grateful. And then staffing for nurses for Gwen's team, we have 3 PHNs to hire, 2 full-time, 1 for the Nurse Family Partnership, 1 for our other evidence-based model under this program, which is called PAT. Parents as Teachers. You're all familiar. We have 2 models that work under these funds for family foundations for visiting grant dollars. And then a half-time, 18 hours a week for Crystal with working on the suicide prevention initiative, right? Does that work? Personal goal?
And yeah, maternal child health.
And maternal child health. Those positions that Crystal left. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Corporate Council report?
Just briefly, and just for informational purposes, because it's a question that has come up recently a couple times, there are dueling pieces of legislation making their way around Madison. One was introduced within the last 2 weeks, and it would clarify the state's Clean Indoor Air Act to make it clear that e-cigarette vaping is covered by that legislation and would prohibit that inside public buildings. There's a second one, which I, as of this morning, I don't think has been introduced, but has certainly been announced, which would specifically exempt e-cigarettes and vaping from the state's. I suspect that one probably has a better chance of becoming law than the other one, but I don't know for sure. So it's something that I'll be watching, and like I said, there's been some interest raised from outside parties about seeing what the county might be able to do on the question of e-cigarettes, and some of it will be dependent on what comes out of Madison. So.
Can I just ask if the county waits until the decision is made and not do anything locally, will that supersede anything the county does in the future?
Whether we wait or not, it will probably supersede. As I said, the one to exempt it, I haven't seen a piece of legislation yet. I'm not sure that it's been introduced. It may just be in the drafting stages, but it would. What I've seen makes it clear that it would overrule any local regulations.
There, if I could also, there was also something in the newspaper about co-sleeping and making that a felony for parents who would be co-sleeping with infants if they were intoxicated under the influence.
Right. Yeah, I know there was a hearing on that, and I don't know beyond that where it's going.
It's funny, when you see people in buildings with those e-cigarettes, some nothing comes out, but some you can see quite a bit coming out. It's weird. And then when you read and try and study it on the internet, well, it depends on who paid for the study, whether it's credit for you or not, or I think it's not, but you really got to look at who paid for the study.
Yeah, that's an excellent comment. We've had complaints, people that have gotten sick or rashes, and so they've complained of where they purchased their e-cigarette cartridges, and there is no regulation on the makeup, the composition of the fluid in the cartridge. So it can have some chemicals that shouldn't normally be there that people aren't even aware of.
Could businesses still make their own rule of not allowed within the building?
The short answer is I'm not sure. And it'll probably depend on what the final legislation looks like. Right now, under the current Clean Indoor Air Act, it does say that businesses can establish themselves as non-smoking establishments, and there's a limit as to sort of for lack of a better term, the bubble around their building that they can make it for both employees and members of the public. So I don't know. I mean, my guess is that private property owners will continue to have some rights to regulate it, but I don't know for sure.
Teens are starting to use it more. They think it's, you know, a cool thing to do. So
and it's flavored and all of those things. All of them.
Other business is allowed by law. Closing board comments.
It was great that Paul Ryan came in and met with everybody. He heard the personal stories of families. I think that has the most impact on elected officials. So it was great to have him. How'd you get him to come in?
Through diligent work, right?
I know he was in the area last week.
It's been
Thursday and Friday in the.
But we've been working on this for 9 months, 6 months, long period of time, and through connections. Gwen has some connections in Racine, and you know, just our partnership program has done such a great job. And you know, that rose to the top, and so we've been in conversation with the DC partnership program and Ryan's counters or his aides in DC. We physically met with his Janesville aide here last fall. I wrote a letter inviting him, and we finally got accepted. So it was a process, but we were very grateful to have him here.
It's important. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Any other comments?
Move to adjourn.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Do we have to set our date?
No.